Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. High Velocity Radio is brought to you by PSI Digital Media Experts, the market leader in delivering digital media services. From manufacturing millions of CDs and DVDs to turnkey e-commerce solutions and streaming high-definition video over their worldwide content distribution network, PSI has the solutions to meet your needs. Find PSI at psidiscs.com, psidiscs.com. The High Velocity Radio Show is where we celebrate innovative professionals producing better results in less time. Produced and directed by Lee Cantor and brought to you live from Radio X Studio in Atlanta, Georgia. Now here are your hosts, Todd Schnick and Stone Payton.
Welcome to this special edition broadcast of the High Velocity Radio Show brought to you by Revere Control Systems. We are not in our Atlanta studio this morning, Mr. Schnick. We are on site at Revere Control Systems and we have our on-site producer, Todd Youngblood, with us.
Absolutely. It's been a great day so far.
It has. We had a lot of fun this morning, learned a lot, and then we went and had spaghetti for six. And
how do you come to Birmingham and have Mediterranean when Dreamland Barbecue is like a half an hour away? I just don't understand that.
Well, that's all right. Can't we can wrap this thing up here in a little bit, and we can all hit Dreamland on the way home, can't we?
I think it's a good idea. Do we need to do the show?
We could do the show in a minute, but get us caught up, if you would, just real quickly, and let us know how Dreamland is going to impact this whole marathon running pursuit of yours.
Dreamland is going to very much negatively impact this marathon training that I'm doing. I'm still recovering from our last visit to Birmingham, which was, a month ago?
Right.
So, not very helpful in that regard.
Well, we haven't done a remote broadcast in quite some time. It's a lot of fun. We've got a gentleman that I've been looking forward to introducing all day long. I guess we better get to it.
Let's get to it.
But yeah, this remote broadcast, I guess, for all intents and purposes, is really brought to us by Revere Control Systems.
Yes, it is. Yes,
and here in the studio, which is actually a conference room at Revere Control Systems,
absolutely.
I am delighted to introduce Mr. Frank Hurt. He is the Grand Poobah CEO, Chief Executive of an organization called River Heights Consulting. Welcome to the show, Frank.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Tell us a little bit about River Heights Consulting and what you're out there doing for folks.
Well, I'll tell you what. First of all, everybody asked me, River Heights, what the heck is that? You know, it is. I want to tell everyone I'm located in Davenport, Iowa, high on the bluffs overlooking the Mississippi River. That's where the River Heights came in. What we do, though, is we work with wholesale distributors and companies that go to market through wholesale distributors to try to take some of the duplication out of the channel to make things happen easier, more efficiently, more effectively. And also something that I think is pretty important. I'm 56 years old. I want to see it happen in my lifetime. So we want to accelerate the process as well.
So what are some of the kinds of challenges that you help your clients work through?
Well, you know, one of the things that we do is just tied to sales in general. When people come to us, you know, lots of times sales processes develop. They're really not processes. I misspoke. But they come to us and they've got, you know, Joe over here who's got 30 years with the company. They've got Jim who just joined them. They've got somebody else. They've got a whole group of people, and everybody has a different approach to how they take things with their customers. Their customers, are confused. Oftentimes, the marketplace is changing. We've been through a recession lately. We've been through recessions in the past, and each time there's a recession, all of a sudden, all these changes and all these problems that have been festering deep under the skin kind of surface up, and people go, "Oh my gosh, what are we going to do?" And they come to us, and one of the things we always wish is, sure, it would have been nice if they would have come to us when times were good instead of when times were bad. It's better to be the doctor when the patient's going to live than when the patient's laying on death's door and they come and say, gee whiz, we got this problem.
You know, one term that I've heard you mention all morning, both in a previous meeting and just before going into our broadcast, is this idea of knowledge-based distribution. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Okay, well, I really do see the world of wholesale distribution breaking up into two different parts where people have taken a path, and one of those paths is I'm going to move a brown box from point A to point B. And there's really not a great deal of expertise in the products or how the products are used. Instead, the expertise is in shipping and getting things there the next day, and that's a good thing. At the other end, there's application-based selling where we're looking at things and saying, okay, we know exactly how to program, we know exactly how to configure, we know exactly how to apply the product. And what I believe is that knowledge-based distribution is when you find a happy medium between the two, where you understand enough about the logistics that you can be at least competitive on the logistics side, but you also understand the application. But more importantly than the application, you understand what the benefit is to the customer. And in that 5,000-year-old measure of value, sheep's heads, money. If you don't measure in money, you're just barking up the wrong tree.
You talk about measuring value. Why is that? Why is that so important?
Well, I think it's more important now than it's ever been. It's been important, but there's been a quiet trend going on that's been accelerated by the last recession. And here's the trend: CEOs of companies have turned over a greater bit of power to the chief financial officers. And we're seeing things like, well, I'll give you a specific example from a client of who this guy is a senior vice president for a major company who used to have signature buying power of $2 million. So if he saw something, he thought it could benefit the company, he wrote a check for $2 million and everything went through, no ifs, ands, or buts, no questions. That's been cut down to $10,000 in his case.
Wow.
And what's gone on is the CFO has inserted one of his people into the buying decision so that things aren't just bought without looking and saying, okay, we're going to buy this new piece of equipment. What's the advantage? And not what's the advantage, in some nebulous way, but what's the advantage in terms of dollars and cents to our organization? And here's one of the deals that's going on. So many people that sell technical products are technical experts. And guess what? They're selling to technical experts. And here's the bad part. The people that they're selling to, those technical experts, don't know how to measure the value either. And so all of these business guys, the CFOs, I hate to say bean counters, but I'll say bean counters. The guys who are bean counters are looking and they're talking to someone who's a computer programmer by trade or an automation expert by trade or a process control person by trade and saying, why should we get this? And he goes, well, because it does it faster or cooler or whatever. Wrong answer. What they want to know is, because it will generate another $500,000 for us. And that's tying that is part of that value metric, part of the measure that goes with knowledge-based distribution and knowledge-based selling. Well, I rattled on forever, didn't I?
Yes,
you guys are kind of looking at me going, does this guy shut up or what?
No.
You bring up a good point, though, because it doesn't sound like rattling on at all to us. And in the same breath, I got to tell you, Todd and I, everything we know about distribution, you could stick in your eye and still see out. I'm interested to know, and I'm sure our listening audience is as well, what is it that qualifies a Frank Hurt to even speak to these matters? From whence do you come?
Well, right after I got out of prison, I started my career working for one of the major manufacturers of automation. I was a computer engineer by trade and really kind of looking, out of school. I wanted to be involved with the new computer technology from the 1970s. And after doing that for about a year, I kind of started saying, these computers don't have as great of conversational skills as the people that use them. And I moved into the sales world of that, became involved with distribution, and really had 28 years of experience in the distribution business. During that time, I served on a million manufacturer advisory councils and served as the president for the North American Trade Association that's responsible for automation products. So most of what I talk about is things that come from real life experience, from stuff that I actually did and I kept seeing happen. Now, when I formed River Heights Consulting, I started looking around and saying, I was thinking from the standpoint of automation and electrical, But I saw the same problems, and it seems like the more broader the base of things that I see, the more similarities I see. And I'll give you a for instance. I worked with a customer who is in the food service business, and you go, well, what in the world does the food service business have to do with automation? Well, here was the reason for our product specialists in the automation business. Customers needed someone to hold their hand and help them configure and select the right product. We helped these guys select an executive chef who works for them, who helps restaurants develop new menu items that increase their profit. Well, why in the heck would they do that? Well, one of the reasons why they do that is because in the restaurant business, if someone's a chef and they've worked there for 6 months, they're like a long-term employee. That, you know, is these guys change jobs, you know, just like you and I change our socks. They work someplace, they move on. And what the company found was each time that chef left, they had to reestablish a new relationship. And sometimes they were successful and sometimes they weren't. When they brought the specialist into place in their own company, then they had something to talk to the owner. And it turns into that financial value thing again. We're able to go into the owner and talk to him about, this is how we can help you make more money, instead of, hey, this is our new whipped topping.
Now, our audience is probably wondering how we hooked up with Frank Hurt on location in Birmingham, Alabama. And just so you guys know, we're actually working with Frank jointly on a project here in Birmingham. But in getting to know you earlier today, sir, you talked about the fact that you've written two books. One is published, and one is now, I believe, in front of an editor. Why don't you tell us about those two books?
Okay, I will. And I'll share a little bit about my journey. I started, in the consulting business, and really was surprised as I talked to clients that there was no real model book on product specialists in the distribution world. After you've gone through this a half dozen times, you start saying, "Well, gee whiz, maybe I should develop something." I went out then and just kept creating materials and creating more and more materials on product specialists and published a book through the National Association of Wholesalers called The Distributor Specialist, Product Champion, Profit Generator. But in the course of doing research for that book, one of the things that I discovered was that there was a big difference between the way the top 25, which lots of people in the wholesale industry call the upper quartile, the top 25% in terms of profits. And it was easy to identify those people because of distributor profit sharing information called PAR reports, profit analyst reports, that allow people to benchmark against the industry. So we saw the people that were in the top 25, and we started noticing a marked difference in the way that they used specialists. So that led us into the field of the product specialist book. But in the research for that, one of the things that we found that the very, very successful specialists brought to their employers was a selection of accounts. Targeting is what we call it. Where instead of taking a product out to all 25,000 customers, the specialist looked and said, okay, which 10 customers could give us an immediate payback? Which 10 customers are most likely to make a decision right now? And so that really became the basis of the next bit of research that we did around targeting. One of the things we found is that companies that have a process for targeting, where they identify prospects, they measure prospects, number one, they have 47% greater likelihood of reaching their financial goals than companies that don't, which is really, you know, probably, if you think about it from a common sense point of view, does not, it shouldn't be rocket science. It's not something that's super complicated, that people that think about it before they do it are going to be more successful. But we also found that there's some nuances in introducing products. When you carefully select who you're going to introduce them to, you get cash flow going quicker, which is a good thing. if you're in the distribution world. You justify inventories quicker, which is another good thing in the wholesale distribution world. But you also build up this feeling amongst the sales force, because if a sales guy goes out and he tries to sell a product 10 times and he doesn't have success with it, his chances continuing are pretty slim. And so what people did was they'd go out and they just willy-nilly take the product to the first 10 people that they came in contact with. If five of those people happened to be, just because the sun, the moon, and the stars were lined up, everything worked well, that they made a sale, then they went, wow, this is a great product. If they didn't, instead of just saying, well, I randomly selected the 20 wrong customers, then that product kind of went into a scrap heap in the back, and the next new product. And one of the things that's happening in the technology world and the world of distribution is new products are exploding. New products are coming down the pipe so fast. When I was young and in the selling business, there would be two or three new products a year. Now there are two or three new products a month. And so, perfectly good products that have had a lot of money invested in them are falling by the wayside, not because they're not good products, but because they weren't targeted properly. And if you're a manager trying to run a sales organization, every time a new product launch doesn't work, you don't know if it's the product or the circumstances, and targeting allows you to be more scientific. And if you're scientific and you have a process, then you have measurements, and you can say, we can break this process into smaller chunks. And as you look at those smaller chunks, we can begin using those smaller chunks to, A, grade our salespeople, to find out if this sales guy's a good guy and this sales guy's a bad guy, or if they know what they're doing. And secondly, to look for coaching points. Because if you've ever played sports and you were a baseball player, your coach didn't say, okay, we're going to teach you everything there is to know about baseball. He first taught you how to catch a grounder, and then he taught you how to catch a fly ball, and then he taught you how to catch this kind and this kind. And you worked on those individual points until you got good, and then you became a well-rounded player maybe. And I think the same thing needs to be applied to sales force.
Now, do you find that individual salespeople, or maybe even their managers, at least initially resist in some ways this whole idea of targeting, or do they buy into it pretty readily?
That is a fabulous question, and let me tell you, in my mind, improving any type of sales organization, the biggest enemy does not come from customers. It does not come from some external force. It usually is your very best and your longest seller who does not want to be managed, who does not want to be judged, who does not want to have any kind of coaching. He just wants to be, give me the company car and leave me alone, and I'll call you and tell you if I've had any success. And oh, by the way, I don't have time for any form of paperwork or report. Oh, except my expense report, which I get there exactly on time every month. And so to answer your question, if you're a sales guy who happens to be listening to this, please forgive me. You may not be that type of person. I'm painting everybody with the same brush. But we have found, as we move through this, that the most experienced people are the ones who are the most resistant. But once we get those experienced people to start applying this, even if they're applying it just to themselves, they will notice improvement and they will begin to embrace it. And we've seen that time and time again.
You mentioned that there's an increased frequency of new product launches. Does that imply then that there's this interest in the new shiny object? And are they able to get away to some extent without targeting because people are willing to buy the new thing? Is that increased frequency of product launches affect their interest in targeting?
I think that the increased frequency means that they absolutely positively have to do it just to manage their own time. I think you're asking the question of, is there really a drive by people to buy new things. And yes, I believe technical people are attracted to new things. I think that we as a culture are attracted to new things. But when you start looking and saying, if you did a side-by-side comparison against, we'll just pick a couple at random. If you did a side-by-side comparison of the Kindle and the new Apple product and say, okay, both of them, work, almost equally the same. Both of them also are, technologically very, very similar. You start saying, okay, how do we determine and differentiate one product versus another? And I personally have a Kindle, and I think that if you were talking to someone who traveled a lot in the car, the Kindle has a feature that allows you to listen to the book that you had been reading. So you sit in your hotel, you read the book, then you plug it in as you get into your rental car and listen to it while you drive another hour down the road. So if I were advising someone who were selling those, to businesses, one of the first things I would say is, hey, this is a really great product for your salespeople that spend a lot of time in the car, and here's the reason why. That's what I mean by targeting, looking and saying, okay, I'd almost look if I were targeting that product and find the person who travels the most and spends the most time in the car, because the more time they spend in the car, the greater the feature that would be. If we could, if I were talking to someone on the Kindle end and saying, okay, what could we do to improve the product? If we targeted the product to the person who spends a lot of time in their car and travels and wants to read and listen, the only other feature that's missing is the feature to be able to download internet radio programs just like this one, and listen to those off of the same device. So I think it has to more to do with than just with the selling aspect, but also has to do with the aspect of how do you plan a product.
So how can our listeners find out more about you and your work and find these books? What's the best way for them to contact you?
Well, the easiest thing to do is come to www.riverheightsconsulting.com. That's riverheightsconsulting.com. Remember, high on the bluffs overlooking the Mississippi River. And if you come to our website, we've got a number of free things, over 50 articles that have been published in various trade publications, little snooglets of books and free things. Or else, if you want to see my ugly mug, you can go to YouTube and do a quick search on YouTube for Frank Hurt. So, well, thanks for asking, incidentally.
Absolutely. Before we let you go, a couple of things. I don't think I'm telling tales out of school in that the project that we are working on that Todd alluded to has to do with this whole business of crafting and nurturing and making sure that we execute effectively alliances.
Mm-hmm.
What advice, if any, do you have to offer our listening audience about building and maintaining a truly productive, practical, profitable alliance?
Well, I think that there's one very, very simple thing that needs to be taken into account whenever there's an alliance that has to be good for everyone. If it's not good for one party, then it's not good for either parties over the long haul. I furthermore say you need to understand what's in it for your partner and make sure your partner understands what's in it for you. And the more of that kind of sharing, the better. And if you are partnering with someone to sell into a market, I think it makes great sense to look at the trends in the market, because the old story that the sea captains had about, out with the tide and following the fair winds and all that, if you can somehow hitch your star to a trend that's unstoppable, you're going to win. And you're going to look like a sales genius. And that's what we all want to do, isn't it?
Is targeting more or less important with an alliance?
I think it's more important. Both sides need to understand the targets. Both sides need to understand why it's a target for the other person. If you are you know, and a lot of my business revolves around wholesale distribution, where they've got partners on the outgoing side who are their customers who buy products, but they also have these partners that make things that they sell. And I think that one of the really big issues that develops in wholesale distribution is where people don't understand for certain who their partners' targets are. And if everyone could come in and say, here are the people that can get the best value out of my product, does this match up with the people that get the best value out of what you're doing? And if there's a match, it's perfect. And if there's not a match, you need to talk about it.
I'm glad I asked, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
One more thing before we let you go. Okay. We have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show, Frank. We like to ask each guest, if they would, to share a mistake that they've made at some point in their career, and really, more importantly, what they feel like they learned from it. Could we get you to do that for us?
Oh, my gosh. I've made so many mistakes, it's not even funny.
And we are running out of time, so,
okay,
so just one, if you would.
You know, geez, that's a tough one. My wife would tell you that I've never made a mistake. No, you know, I think that the one mistake that I would say was really a dumb mistake was force fitting a product into a customer. I worked for a company that came out with a new product, and one of the things that was happened, they offered a great prize to the salesperson that sold the first one, and I was a competitive guy. I always liked to be the first. I always liked to do things that way, and I force fit that product in. But then the other side, that was kind of like the devil on one shoulder and the angel on the other shoulder, made me keep going back and going back and going back and reworking with that. So even though I won the prize, I think it was an AT computer back in the 1983 or 84 kind of time frame, even though I won that computer, I invested so many weekends and after hours times keeping that system going, it was not even funny. So that's probably the only one I can really put on the radio. How's that?
That's fair enough. Understood. But it sounds like, but you need to be cognizant of the what you can anticipate is your return on investment for putting your energy into something like that.
You know, I think that, plus I think that, you know, if you're a salesperson and you're working for a company and that company asks you to constantly force fit something into an equation that mm-hmm. doesn't go, my advice is to start looking for a new company. And I stand by that forever. That's one of the things I wish
advice.
I would have done.
Solid advice from an experienced gentleman with his share of scar tissue, I'm sure.
I wasn't born this ugly, yes.
Well, Frank, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show, and I hope you'll come back sometime.
I'd love to. Next time I'm in Atlanta, I'll look you guys up.
Sounds
when Delta strands you there again, let us know.
Normally that's after 9:30 at night, so it'd be a late night version.
We're
of
entrepreneurs.
This.
We're
okay.
No worries.
Well, until next time, this is Stone Payton, Todd Schnick, our on-site producer, Todd Youngblood, Mr. Frank Hurt, and everyone here at the Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.